Hello there, this is Bane. When I'm not out on the streets of Gotham hunting the Batman, I find myself listening to Part-Time Fanboy on a regular basis. Be sure to check out Part-Time Fanboy at www.parttimefanboy.com for somewhat weekly podcasts and reviews about various fanboy-related subjects. Also be sure to like them on Facebook and follow them on the Twitter. Do it now, or I'll have to do something awful to your spine.
How are you, Jason?
I'm good.
Good to talk to you. Thanks.
Yeah. You know, we've talked online, and I've seen you a couple times at shows, saw you at WonderCon.
Yeah.
But we haven't Skyped before.
No, never. And I appreciate you taking the time to come on the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. I've been into your books for a long time, even when I was reviewing for Ain't It Cool. I think it was Super Real was the first one that you exposed me to, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I think, I know it was Super Real. I'm just trying to think if you had just picked it up at, I first got on Ain't It Cool. Somebody had picked up the book at Chicago Con when I first started out. And I don't know if that was you or if I had, somehow I ended up talking with you and would just, I don't know if it was after you had reviewed something on there, but for whatever reason I had gotten in contact with you and would just get you everything that I did.
I think it was sent to me. I think you sent me the first issue, and then I was like, oh, this is great, because, well, for anyone who doesn't know you, I mean, I'm speaking to Jason Martin, who is the publisher right now for Action Lab Danger Zone, correct? Now, is it Action Lab Danger Zone Comics, or is it just Action Lab Comics, or how do I address you, sir?
Well, you've got it. I'm Jason. in terms of Action Lab, it's Action Lab Entertainment.
Okay.
And there's Action Lab proper, which is the non-rated material, and then the new mature readers line is Danger Zone, so it's Action Lab Danger Zone.
So
that's just for material that's beyond PG-13. So
gotcha. So
they've got some licenses for all ages properties, and you can't have, you know, your mature readers books coming out under the same umbrella.
Oh, gotcha. That makes sense. So the way it works is you are sort of Action Lab's, like, Joe Quesada when he was at Marvel Knights, like, running sort
there
of...
There you go, yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, so I'm the president, quote-unquote, of the Danger Zone, so I'm the creative director of that line, in essence.
Yeah, that's great. That's
go-to
great.
Guy for spearheading that line.
Oh, that's great. But originally, you were doing your own stuff through Super Real Graphics, correct?
Correct, yeah. I started with my own book, Super Real, like you mentioned, so I self-published that, and then as I was doing that, I built up a community of friends online and through shows, and, you know, new people with cool books, and so I leveraged my ability with publishing to get some stuff out for some folks that I knew. Did a line of original graphic novels called Super Real Graphics Presents, and we did Home by Dave Dwanch, Wolves of Odin by Grant Gould, and Zombie Tramp by Dan Mendoza.
Yeah. I mean, I remember a lot of the stuff that you sent me that you were just publishing was also great. Like the Wolves of Odin, Gnome, you know, stuff like that. I guess let me just start at the beginning. I mean, what gets you going into self-publishing your own comic? I mean, even when you started, which was probably what, like 7 or 8 years ago, I think. Has it been
that
long?
10 years, like next week, because I started first public showing as a comic creator was at San Diego, 2003.
Oh, wow.
The first show I ever did was Comic-Con.
Wow.
And, of course, this was 10 years ago, so that year I think they had attendance of about 65,000, and I think it was the last year that they hadn't yet moved to the full show floor, you know, hadn't occupied the whole space.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, within like 5 years of that, they were maxed out at 125K. It doubled in size.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, it was 10 years ago, and I had a little ash can of Super Real, just a concept with some, you know, like a mock trailer, if you will, of the concept. And, yeah.
Wow. So you must have had a good experience. I mean, you just jumped into the pool. I mean, you didn't do like a small con before that. Like you.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, timing wise, I think it just lined up. You know, I certainly was aware that San Diego was the biggest show or one of the biggest. And I was at a point where I was ready to start, you know, exhibiting and you know, or looking to do that. So, yeah, just started there. I mean, I'm from Portland, Oregon. And so there's a local show here every November. And I did that show that year, you know, so it wasn't like I had designs to go big. It just it worked out that way.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's great. And so what? Well, I mean, let's just start from the beginning. I mean, like, how did you get into comics?
Well, I'm a lifelong fan, but I had a period where I fell out of comics. But I started, I'm Gen X, I'm born in the 70s, you know, grew up in the 80s.
Yeah.
So my first exposure to comics was the Marvel Comics Star Wars adaptation.
Oh.
I can still remember being at the local department store and walking down the toy aisle and seeing the poly pack. You know, I think it was issues 1 through 3, or I don't even think it was the full 6-issue adaptation. But you know, it was a licensed book for Marvel, and they back in those days they would poly pack books and sell them in department stores and whatnot, and you know, bring in new readers. But that's how
I don't
I started.
Do that anymore.
My dad was artistic, and I was already into drawing, so I just took those comics, and they were the greatest thing to me, because not only did I want, you know, as any kid, most kids my age, live and breathe and inhale anything Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, I could sit there and I would take tracing paper and I could draw Darth Vader and TIE fighters and stormtroopers to my heart's delight. So
that's
kind of, you know, it turned me on to comics and drawing comics at that point.
So. That's so interesting, because that's kind of, I guess Star Wars kind of had a role for me, like how I started drawing too, which was I distinctly remember my mother having to take me to work one day and then like taking me to Burger King or McDonald's for lunch, and they had an Empire Strikes Back glass, and it was like the Hoth scene or something, and I was copying that glass, and from then on I just wanted to. That's really interesting. So were you drawing since you were little, or?
Yeah, I mean, I don't recall drawing before that. I'm sure I did. Well, yeah, no, I do remember somewhat, but yeah, so always kind of was inclined that way.
Oh, and then from Star Wars, were you just jumping on to the rest of Marvel's catalog, or?
Yeah, well, you know, at that time they were putting out a lot of similar licensed material. So there was Battlestar Galactica, you know.
Yeah.
I was a big sci-fi geek, you know, because of Star Wars. And I think ROM Space Knight was right around that time.
ROM, yeah.
Absolutely loved ROM, was my favorite book, you know.
Me too.
And then, yeah, it was a couple years later, there was a 7-Eleven close to my house, and I used to look at the spinner rack there and just picked up a Fantastic Four, got into that.
Nice.
Got into the Iron Man of that era, which was the Michelin Layton era, and just kind of jumped around to different Marvel titles as they looked cool to me. The DC stuff never really appealed to me that much. They were just a little more straight-laced, you know. They were really two different products at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Marvel stuff appealed to me. And then it was shortly after that that the, you know, comic shops started up and the independent boom. So I was big into independent stuff like Cerebus and all the black and whites, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mage, all that stuff. That
oh,
was
wow.
Mid-early 80s, you know.
Oh, wow. And so did you study art, like go to school for art or stuff like that? Or?
Not really. I didn't go to college per se. I only ever did a semester of community college, and I just took some art courses at school. I, you know, you were allowed to take up to two art periods in high school, so I did that. Beyond high school, not really, just a couple college classes.
Oh, wow. It's turning out, I think, that you and I have a lot in common.
Yeah, so it was basically, once high school came around, I was still in artistic and into doing that, but my passion for comics, it kind of waned. I turned 16, got a car, found other things to do with my time. wasn't reading comic books anymore. Up until that point, I had been drawing them and creating my own comics. I did a whole comic series in the junior high years. And so I fell out of comics at that time for several years until I was at the coast one day. I was going to the beach and with my girlfriend at the time, and I thought, I'm going to be on the beach for hours. There's this little store here. I know they used to sell comic books. I'll go see if they still do. They still had a rack of comics there. And I looked at the rack, and it was there was Amazing X-Men number 2 or 3 and Astonishing X-Men. I'm like, what is this? What's this, an Uncanny X-Men? There's a whole new X-Men series. And oh my God, look at the artwork. It's like manga artwork. And wow, Professor X is dead, and it's so amazing. The X-Men have just moved forward, and they're doing all these amazing things. Of course, it turns out it's Age of Apocalypse, and it's a whole, event stunt book.
Yeah. But, they got you.
Yeah, well, and at the time, the Max was on TV, and I was really loving that on MTV, the cartoon of the Max comic.
Oh, yeah.
So I went to my local comic shop, hadn't been there in years, and picked up the Max and saw this Gen 13 number 2 with J. Scott Campbell art, and again, my mind was alone. It's like, wow, comics are cool. And so I back into it. It was 1994, I think, and so I've been, comic fiend, certifiable since then.
Nice. And did you start trying to draw comics from then, or were you just a reader?
Well, again, I had drawn them, through my early teenage years, and then had stopped doing it. But then at that point, yeah, I was just a reader. But it rekindled my desire to draw. I started thinking, oh my God, why did I ever stop drawing? And so I got, sketchbooks out and started sketching again. And, as a little bit of time went by, I started coming up with ideas for books. And that's where Super Real came from.
Gotcha.
I just decided, I'm not getting any younger. I still want to do this. I'll make a go of it.
So was your intent always to go indie? You didn't want to try and get in at Marvel or DC or any of that?
No, being my circumstance, what it was, I unfortunately stopped drawing at the time that my talent would have developed, matured. I knew I was limited in my ability, and that it would take me quite some time to get things to a level where I could hope to get, freelance paid work. So, I knew I could create my own comic books. I had already done that before for myself. So I just thought, I can go that route, create and publish my own books and, tell the stories I want to tell in the way that I want to. And, if I do it for enough time, it'll get my skills best that I can at this point. And then I can explore that, if the case, if that's what I want to do, if I don't make it with that book or whatever.
Oh, wow. I got to tell you that's pretty impressive, because I know that for a lot of artists, like myself included, it's like you sort of start out and you're like, oh, I'm not good enough. Oh, I'm not good. You know what I mean? And you're drawing pages and stuff, and you kind of end up like sort of throwing things out and never moving forward. Like, was that just something, because you just said like, to yourself, you kind of admitted to yourself that you were limited in your ability. Like, did you just say, like, screw it, I'm just going to look past that? Or, what?
Well, I knew I was limited in my ability. I mean by that to say that, like I said, I couldn't put a portfolio together and get hired by Marvel. I knew I wasn't, that good, at least, maybe with some time. But so rather than spending however long it takes to get to that level, I felt I was good enough to tell, to do comics.
Yeah.
Certainly. Being from, that 80s indie background, where you had, like I mentioned, all the independent books of the 80s, at that point, it was a new world for comics. It had moved from the newsstand to the comic shop, and literally anybody could do comics. You just had to tell cool stories. You had books that were wildly popular, that where the artists could never work for Marvel or DC, But they were just doing cool comics. So, you know, there's nothing in comics that says you have to be, you know, Art Adams or Neil Adams or any other Adams I can think of, Bruce Adams, you know, to do comics. You have to be that good to get to have somebody that's got, you know, licensed properties and lots of money to give you a monthly gig, sure, but you know what I mean?
Wow, that's great. And so San Diego being your first show, like how much research were you doing on shows and self-publishing, or did you just make the ash can and say, I'm going to go with this?
I can't even remember, you know, when we started talking about that, I was thinking back, you know, why exactly did I go to San Diego? And I know I researched and that was the biggest show. And, yeah, I just thought, you know, that's the best place to start out. You know, if I can print up X amount of these books and they've got 50,000 people there, I sell them to 1%, I'm rolling in money, you know? Well, yeah. Of course, you don't sell them to 1% of the people there, you know? It's, yeah, it was just all learning on the fly.
Sure, sure. And so at that point, like, did Super Real Graphics come first, or did Super Real the comic, or did you just make the comic and then sort of develop the company afterwards?
Right, yeah, it was just, you know, I was making the comic, I was self-publishing it, so I had to have some sort of, you know, business entity, publishing company, something masthead to put on it. Very aware, you know, I guess you mentioned researching and whatnot. I was very keen on marketing and branding and all of that. So that was all part and parcel of what I was doing. I was, you know, aware that, you know, if I'm going to try to make a go of an independent book, I'm going to have to get it in front of as many people as I can. So yeah, I, you know, it was Super Real Graphics because the book was super real and I didn't want to have it, you know, at the time I went through millions of names and I didn't want to have too kooky of a name, because a lot of the small press areas, independent publishers, you know, they'll just name things, really bizarre things, you know, think, people going to take you too seriously with a name like that? But for whatever reason, I thought that sounded like a good name. But the logo that I developed was just SR for Super Real, and it was really SR Graphics that I branded and marketed. But it was just for the purpose of doing the book. You know, and I certainly was not opposed to branching that out and doing more publishing things with it, but was, again, learning on the fly with all of that, too.
Sure. Oh, wow. So, and when you were working on the comic, like, what was your day job? Were you working in graphics and stuff, or?
No. You know, I was working, and that's another reason, that kind of the confluence of things that led me to there was that, as I said, I had gotten back into comics and back into drawing and, you know, was creating this comic and this idea, developing it. I worked in high tech, a local computer company, had a production planning job, 9-to-5, had been there for a few years. And at that company, on your sixth year, you had a sabbatical. I want to say it was 6 months, maybe it was 4 months, but you had a paid sabbatical from the company. And so I knew I had that coming up, and I'm like, I can work on my comic. And, yeah. And you know, once that came to pass, the company was bought out by IBM, and they, with purpose of just getting the intellectual rights to what they were doing, and they shut down the whole facility. Uh-huh. So I was laid off from work there, and I thought, well, I'll just, you know, pursue the comics thing. And in the meantime, my dad does landscape maintenance, has his own business. So I was working with him, went back to working with him while I launched the comic book endeavor.
Oh, wow.
And I still do that part-time as well.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's great. And so you must be doing well at your shows, because you were also, that's the other thing that I was also very impressed with, because I would always go to your website and, you know, you had your blog and you had it laid out pretty well. Like, it was a very, you know, like, you had your Netflix recommendations, like, hey, I'm recommending this movie. Like, so you had sort of a small presence online. I always thought that was really smart. Did you just figure, like, I'm going to do something different with my website, or had you seen that someplace else?
Well, yeah, I guess it gets back to, like I was saying, I was keen on branding and marketing, and, you know, was aware that, you know, there's the internet and, you know, make use of it, website, blog, anything and everything you could do on there. And at the time, you know, Newsarama was like the comic website. You know, it's still the largest, probably, or one of. They had the way it was set up back then was that it was open forums commenting, you know, on any and all posts. And I was already, you know, commenting on posts there regularly. So I just added a banner for Super Real, you know, that linked to the websites and whatnot. And, you know, that got the book a lot of recognition. You know, I can't tell you how many times it shows people like, oh, you're the Super Real guy, you know, where have I seen you, you know? So yeah, it was, just kind of an extension of that, just doing anything I could, you know, to get myself and the book out there. And was, you know, really pining for digital comics back then and, you know, other avenues for creators and publishers, you know, because with the industry being what it was then, it's turned around quite a bit, but it's still, you know, incredibly tough for independent small press back catalog self-publishers. You know, it's tough to compete against the bigger publishers. So.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of the big question. You're publishing your own book, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, Jason Martin, publisher of, you know, like I said, the Gnome graphic novel and the other graphic novels that I also reviewed and thought were really well done. What was it that made you want to jump into just saying, like, I'm going to expand this company. I'm going to become a publisher of other people's material?
Well, I think, like I mentioned, you know, I was already eager to, you know, to do other things like that. And just the network of people that I had met, you know, the opportunities came where friends had books that I thought were cool, and, you know, I had the know-how to get them published, you know, get it released through Diamond into comic shops. So just decided to take a chance on trying my hand with that.
Wow. So how would that work? Like, you had a guy who had a book, like, you met, like, at whatever show, and you're like, hey, I know what to do. Do you want me to publish it for you? Or,
yeah, I mean, well, you know, doing a lot of shows, you meet a lot of like-minded creators, up-and-coming creators. With the internet, you're globally connected, especially you know, with the prevalence of Twitter and Facebook now. Not so much anymore, but back then, DeviantArt was kind of the hub for artists. Yeah. Online, and so, you know, met and became friends with and networked with a lot of people through there. So yeah, just people that I knew, you know, that had, you know, were showing their work on DeviantArt or whatever, and was like, whoa, what is this? This looks like a really cool book, or, you know.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm sort of getting at is, like, because there's definitely a shift where you're, instead of being like, hey, I know how to publish, here's some advice, and then there's like, hey, I will publish it for you. You know what I'm saying? Like, was it just like that they didn't want to deal with those responsibilities necessarily, and you,
right, yeah,
and you,
I
like
mean,
doing it?
There's definitely, you know, there's definitely a need for that out there, because not everybody is motivated to publish it themselves.
Sure.
Or, you know, to handle all the business aspects and the ins and outs of everything that comes with that, or B, you know, willing to risk the upfront money for printing or what have you.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got to have, you've got to be fairly committed to something to go down that road, or you know, be willing to figure out how to do it. So there's a lot of creators out there that, you know, aren't prone to that type of stuff. Just like there's a lot of, you know, boggles my mind, there's a lot of artists out there that have no, you know, desire or ability to write. You know, they just draw other people's stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so there's...
Oh, it's interesting. I mean, I definitely think it, you know, it takes sort of a different kind of, and a sort of a special kind of mindset, you know, because, like, whenever we've run into to do what you, you know, what you're doing, because whenever I've run into you at cons, you've always got, like, a great display, you know, you always seem to know what you're doing, and I've always been impressed. And there's a part of me that's like, you just keep reading how self-publishing is murder or like death, and it's like I'm always wondering, like, how does this guy do it? Like, you know, but you're always there, you're consistent, you're always at the show, you've usually got something new, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
that's impressive. I guess it's just a compliment less than it is a question.
Well, thank you.
But at what point, at what point do you hook up with the guys from Action Lab? Is it just through, you know, Comic-Con, WonderCon, different shows?
Yeah, with Action Lab, the book Gnome that we mentioned was created by Dave Dwan. She's a friend of mine. And, you know, we would hang out at shows or do room shares for shows or, you know, have dinner or whatever. And he a couple years ago joined up with another group of creators and created Action Lab. So I've been, you know, talking with him as they were up and running all along. But last year we were at San Diego. Every year at San Diego, we had been splitting with a group of creators, different rental homes. So we would talk and after the show and just talk shop. And it just seemed like things were lining up to where, you know, I had a lot of projects that I was trying, you know, to develop for myself. And, you know, I still was, wanting to work in the publishing arena, so it just kind of, you know, was a good fit there, and simultaneously they also were looking to create a new mature readers line, and so it just worked, you know, made sense that would be what we came to call Danger Zone, and I would run that for them. And then bring, you know, some of the titles that I had with Superreal Graphics over with me, books Zombie Tramp.
Which is a hysterical book, by the way. That's a great book. I remember, I think you sent me one of those for review, and I think I wrote in my review, like, I don't know about this. And then I read it, and I ended up really liking it. I mean, that was a great book, especially because I'm into zombies. You know, which I guess brings us to your current book, right?
Right. Yeah, I was going to say Night of the 80s Undead. That was a book back then that I was working with Bill McKay, collaborating. He's the artist who's working with me on that. And so, you know, as part of working with them at Danger Zone, I could also have a home for my books moving forward. And so the first of those that I had lined up was Night of the 80s Undead, which came out this week, the first issue.
Oh, that's great. And for anybody who hasn't seen the book or read the book, do you want to talk about the concept a little bit?
Sure. It's basically a Russian zombie virus contaminated Colombian cocaine supply that's unleashed on a big Hollywood party in 1986.
Uh-huh.
And there's a group of teens who break into the party and, you know, wind up having to survive coke zombie carnage. So, you know, just that old story of 1980s Russian zombie virus. Hollywood Park.
Oh, it's really a fun book. I mean, I had a lot of fun reading it, especially being a fan of, you know, 80s movies. And I mean, I also grew up in the 80s. You know, zombie movies and stuff like that. I mean, it really does set up the mix of kind of like teen valley girl, you know, meets like Night of the Living Dead. I mean, it's a really smart idea.
Right. It's basically the movie that John Hughes and George Romero would have made had they collaborated.
Yeah. How many issues are there going to be?
It's a 3-issue miniseries, and it'll be collected into a trade. So it's one self-contained story.
Nice. Oh, okay. That's
with the idea being that it's easily could continue with sequels. Of themes that you know, just write themselves.
Are you ever going? Would you stick with the 80s or jump right into the 90s? Or,
well, I've got a sequel already. A plot for the sequel, And I don't want to spoil that. It is born from the end of the first book. You could have a Return of the 80s Undead. You could have Night of the 90s Undead. So it's rife with possibility.
So let me ask you this. What is it about the adult material sort of that you gravitate towards, or sort of the harder edge material? And yeah, how hard is it?
I wouldn't want to call it adult because that confuses people.
Yeah, no. I mean, sure. It's not pornographic. It's, you know.
My sensibility is anything goes with storytelling. Raised on comic books and movies. I'm an only child. My parents were young. They involved me with everything in their lives. So any movie they went to, I went to. So I've never had like this taboo of, oh, that's rated R. It just, anything goes with me story-wise. I love genre movies. Horror movies in particular have, gore, drug, sex, violence, language, whatever. Big Tarantino fan. I'm drawn to that kind of subversive material. So it's just naturally my wheelhouse for storytelling. That's
sure.
Just the stories that I'm interested in telling.
Sure, sure.
Just fun, anything goes.
But how hard do you find it to market that material? Because don't you have to have a certain number of orders to get in previews? And how much harder is it to sell that type of material these days? Or do you find it that it's not difficult at all?
I don't think it is.
Really?
With the comic book market being what it is, it's predominantly aging fanboys. The books until very recently with the inroads in digital have just gone out to the comic shops and not brought in new readers. You don't really have much of a fan base that's not of a mature age.
Uh-huh.
Now, of course, the majority of the fan base that you do have are into, your traditional superhero comics. So it is a jump to sell them on things that aren't superhero centric, but that's the case with any independent comic. Predominantly those are not about superheroes either.
Yeah.
If it's a mature book through Diamond, it's not as if it's in a different catalog or retailers are hesitant to order it because of that. Every publisher has different ratings. They just don't necessarily, like in the case of Action Lab, it's broken out as a mature reader's line, similar to like what DC did with Vertigo. Usually it's the other way around. The publisher will create a kid-centric line. In this case, Action Lab had always done books of any content, but they had a book called Princeless that was Eisner nominated last year, and they got kind of to be known for, and it was an all ages tale. So a lot of people were bringing them projects of that nature, and they got some license deals for all ages material. So they had become known as an all ages publisher, so it really made sense for them to create the area that for the material that's outside of that. So it's why it naturally worked that way for them.
Yeah. And so I did read the last page of the book where, you were saying, your commentary, why zombies and stuff like that. But I guess I do have to ask, you're not fearful of sort of an oversaturation of the market or zombies?
No, I was, like I say, to your point, the comments in the back of the book. For a long time, I very much was hesitant to do anything with zombies because, as you point out, it feels as if they're oversaturated. But and especially in comics, where a few years ago you had one zombie comic come up, and then all of a sudden there were two or three every month, and it felt like there just were really a lot of books. But with Zombie Tramp and Dan Mendoza, my friend who did that book, I was hesitant at first to publish that, and then I saw the reception that book got at shows, and it's like, well, obviously there's a market for this, and I love this type of stuff, so I'm just it's silly to resist it. So I've embraced it, and I'm a huge zombie fan, and so this is a story I'd love to tell. You know, it's fun to try and think of something new to do with zombies. They're, you know, because as you say, they are so prevalent. And so by setting this, you know, it's set in the 80s, but it's basically a 1980s horror zombie genre movie, right, as a comic book. But the nice thing about it is it's written looking back, so it's as if it's you know, a VHS horror movie that's created in the 80s by someone who's traveled forward in time and can look back at the 80s and you know, just have fun with all of the different the toys that you can play with from that era. And you know, to that end, it's not just a zombie horror story. It's also, as you mentioned, it's got, you know, the John Hughes teenage rom-com kind of storyline at the center of it, and it's got very much an 80s action movie arc to it. So it's just a lot of, it's really fun to write and have Bill draw and see people's reactions to them.
Yeah, it's got, I mean, it's really clever in the fact that it also, you know, kind of makes fun of sort of the Hollywood celebrity culture back then too. I mean, you know, with these sort of stand-ins for, you know, some of the most famous stars at the time.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty brilliant.
Yeah, that just kind of, when the idea came to me, it just, for whatever reason, I gravitated towards building it around 80s icons. It just seemed like, well, if it's Night of the 80s Undead, what if there's, you know, 80s icons that are, you know, part of the story?
Yeah.
So it just, yeah.
And
like I say, it kind of wrote itself.
Yeah. One of the things that stood out for me, too, were the colors, because, you know, it's kind of a different palette than what I usually expect from a zombie book, because there's all these like neon bright colors. But then as I was reading through it, I was like, oh, it's 80s Undead. It's neon. It's like, you know, it's like that those bright pastel, whatever, neon colors, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, for the longest time, backing up with the book, I created and wrote it, and working with Bill McKay, who's done a lot of stuff for the book Zombies vs. Cheerleaders, done covers and inks for them. He's doing the art, but I like to, when I you know, because I'm an artist as well, when I did my book Super Real, when I do my comics, I like to work straight from pencils and color over those. And so I got Bill to agree to work, you know, for me, because I always had intended to color the book, to work from his pencils instead of he normally inks. Yeah. So for the longest time, I was kind of struggling with, well, how do I want to approach this color-wise, you know, because with zombies, as you point out, it's kind of tricky with horror comics to get, you know, the horror elements to play right on the comic book page. You know, certainly you can do things with color that help with that. I just eventually settled on, you know, at first I was just going to do some limited pastel colors off of mostly black and white artwork, but then finally decided to just go full color, but have it very heavily based around these three neon colors that get used throughout it.
So,
give it just, you know, a very unique 80s look. A very, like you said, 80s graphic pastel Nagel kind of design look to it.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes it stand out. But like when you're laying out your colors with pencils, does that make laying your flats out like any harder? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah, it must, because...
Yeah.
So are you doing like selecting and... Like on your own, I mean, it must take longer to color a page that way.
Yeah, it does. Unfortunately, I still work with a mouse. I haven't.
Oh my god!
Yeah. So, like on this book, we've got people that that help with flats.
Okay.
That, on some of the books that we have at Action Lab. So, on this one, you know, I'm just working with. Flatted pages that, yeah, so somebody else is doing the selecting. But yeah, I'm setting the colors and then going and doing all the finished color work.
Jason, Wacom is calling your name. How could you?
No, no.
Could you still be doing it with a mouse? Oh my God, that sounds painful.
Well,
I
want to get a Cintiq, and I just cannot afford that. And
well, why not just get the little pen tablets? Those are great too.
I was gonna get the Intuos, and then I had read some things about a low end tablet that people were just raving about, and I got that, and it there were software issues with the, with the PC.
Well, you should. I mean, if the Intuos is
I need to get a Wacom a tablet of some sort.
Yeah, no. I mean, if the Intuos is too much, or you want to test something out, we were just looking at my job for tablets for like contractors, and there's like they have like something called the Bamboo, which works okay. I mean, it's not Intuos or whatever, but right now they're cheap. I think there's one called like a Bamboo Splash or Create. I can't remember. I can send you the link after we're done. But like, it would be good to practice on. And, the sensitivity is a little less, but you could learn and accomplish some really good stuff just with that. I don't know. That's just my advice.
Yeah, I definitely need to get a set up. I'm aware of that.
Yeah, you just shocked me. Have you ever heard of a plugin called... B-Pelt? Have you ever heard of this thing? You should look it up. It's for Photoshop, and it basically lays out your flats for you and does a pretty good job too.
I had not heard of that.
Yeah, it's called B-Pelt, like as in like the letter B and then the pelt of an animal. And it just runs through some actions. And I think it's good for like CS5. I mean, they have like CS4, CS5 versions. Once you get to CS6, you have to like pay. But
But
it's free, and if you needed, I can send you a link for that too.
I just Googled it while you were talking about it.
Yeah. So
it's B is short for Boudwin, with a IJ.
I did not know that. So
there's a reason why it's just a B.
So what? I guess since we were talking a little bit about zombies, what was your favorite? What's your favorite zombie movie?
Return of the Living Dead.
Oh, really? That is a great one. I love it.
I just absolutely love that. That is just like so many things go off so well in that movie with the design, the special effects, the sound, the music, the story, the directing, the cinematography. Everything in that movie is just spot on. It's like a zombie movie thrill ride, and it's a zombie, it's a horror comedy, and it's really kind of the first to spin zombies in that new way, and it's the one that gave us zombies who craving brains.
Yeah.
The unforgettable Tar Man and just the treasure trove of zombie cool in that movie. Of course, love the Romero films. Dawn being my favorite. I really love the Dawn of the Dead remake. Zack Snyder remake is one of my favorite movies too.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm personally, I mean, I love all those movies too, but my favorite is 28 Days Later, pretty much. I mean, I know technically they're not.
Yeah, like, I really like 28 Days Later, like it a lot. It turns there at the end, and it's great, but it's got more in its mind than zombies, and they're not technically zombies. I absolutely love that movie, and it's a great movie, fantastic movie. Danny Boyle's great.
Yeah.
Amazing director.
Yeah.
I would love to get a cut of that movie. There is deleted scenes and alternate endings on that, and I much prefer the cut ending that they had for that. It was
Where he dies at the end. Yeah, me too. I remember when I saw it in the
obviously it was the the intended story.
I remember seeing it in the theater. And loving everything, and the end, I was a little bit like, happy ending.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we're waving handmade quilt parachutes, and they found us.
But that is
It was a bit much.
That is the first zombie whatever infected movie where I literally thought like, oh, forget it. No, I'm just blowing my head off. I'm not even trying. Like, I thought
it's an amazing movie. I love Shaun of the Dead. There's a lot. Oh, you know, yeah. I like classics, the new ones that, you know, that do fun stuff with it. You bet.
What'd you think of World War Z? Have you seen it yet?
Yeah. You know, I liked it a lot.
Really?
Didn't love it. You know, I knew it was really sanitized while I was watching it, but it didn't really strike home until towards the end of the movie. There's a scene where
spoilers.
You know, they're in this quarantine medical facility and trying to escape zombies, and Brad Pitt's trying to do something or escape a zombie, and all the action happens off camera, and I'm like, what the hell is he doing? And then I realized, well, he's bashing the head in of a zombie,
yeah,
you know, and but they can't show that, and I'm like, oh, this is you know, if this movie could, you know, it just blew my mind right there. I'm like, holy shit. Excuse me, I don't know if we can cuss on this.
No, you
but,
can.
You know, it's just mind-boggling that The Walking Dead can do anything.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, a movie that's rated PG-13 can't show anything.
It's I know. We were talking about that on the podcast.
Fun movie, I think. You know, for as much that, I hadn't read the book, so I can understand if fans of the book are.
Oh, you got to read the book.
You know, certainly being a deviation from that, but.
Oh yeah.
I thought it was, you know, fairly solid.
Yeah, you got to read the book. So I mean. So you've got two more issues of this book, Night of the 80s Undead. And then do you want to talk about any of the other ones that Action Lab Danger Zone has got coming out? Because you guys have some good horror books. I mean, I read The Trip, and I loved it.
Oh, did you?
You picked
that up? Cool.
Yeah. I actually reviewed it for our site, and at some point I would like to talk to the writer and artist because I thought that was a really good book, but... I've seen some of your other stuff.
Get in touch with Jeremy, and we can hook that up. I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, we just launched in May the first titles, and there's several books that we have that are coming out now, and then a lot more that we've got in the pipeline that we're going to be announcing in San Diego next week. But yeah, we've got The Trip, like you mentioned, which was an original graphic novel by Jesse Grillo and David Brame, the writer and artist, respectively. And David Brame's artwork is just amazing. I love his artwork. Just a really kinetic, inky style. And with the colors they have on that, it just lends itself so well to a horror story. And then we also had the Double Jumpers trade paperback, speaking of the books that... the fine collected books that we've had come out so far. That's another book created and written by Dave Dwanch, the creator of Gnome that we talked about. He's creative director on the Action Lab side.
But, yeah.
That was published through Action Lab before we created Danger Zone. It was collected and published through us, and that's just a genius idea of a concept. Anything goes, raunchy R movie, you know, story of. Basically, it's a group of game programmers that are at a conference in Las Vegas unveiling their new virtual reality game. Then while they're testing the game after the, in between days at the show, they wind up getting stuck inside the virtual reality fantasy game, and the characters they're playing transfer to their bodies in Las Vegas. And so you've got wizards and ogres running wild in Las Vegas in their bodies, and they're trapped in this fantasy world. It's just it's like a Freaky Friday meets The Hangover kind of thing.
Nice. Yeah, I think I read some of that, and the art in that is fantastic.
Yeah, it's Bill Blankenship is the artist on that, and he's amazing. He's a super. Talented artist, and then also his colors are just insanely good. So that book is just gorgeous. Yeah. And then for new series, single issues that we have out so far, we had
The Final Plague.
One of them, but I guess not. We had M Theory, which is just an amazing story. There's a true a common denominator here with all these. Again, I'm afraid of these amazing artists and amazing writers. It's M Theory, which the first issue is out, and it's very much a horror comedy. And you've got this young man who wakes up dead with his new kitten alongside him that now talks, and suddenly they're visiting St. Peter, and he's putting them on a mission back on Earth, and they have no idea what's going on, but they're thrown into circus midget zombies that are attacking them, and a crazy Russian woman that's helping them out. It's an amazing story that really straddles a lot of genres. It starts out, like I said, horror comedy, and then you just when you get issue two, you're just going to be blown away by the stuff that they do. It's just a really fun book. Ghost Town, which another book that was co-created by Dave Dwanch, and they've got there's a introductory issue that's written by him with art by Justin Greenwood, who does a lot of work for Oni. That's come out, and then in the second issue you get your regular creative team of Ryan Lindsay, a writer out of Australia, with Daniel Logan, and that's a story of a time device that gets stolen from a tech company and utilized to move nuclear weapons forward in time. So you've got American terrorists who pretty much try to take the country hostage with this technology, and basically they set off a bomb in one city and say Washington D.C. is next unless you secede to all our insane demands. So the book then jumps to Washington D.C. once it's been cordoned off and everybody's been asked to leave, and then it looks at the people who stay behind and just the craziness that would happen there and the whole mythology of what's going on with this story.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, so it's like a action political thriller, urban crime kind of thing.
Oh, wow. And then the one that I kind of mentioned before that I don't think you've talked about is The Final Plague.
Right. That one just came out the week before last, the week before 80s Undead. And another, another awesome book.
The concept alone is fantastic.
Yeah, this one is basically what if there were a viral outbreak similar to zombies, similar to 28 Days Later, but instead of it affecting humans, it affects animals. And so it's the story centered on an Iowan farm family and the outbreak of this virus, and there's these, starting with rats and rabbits and all the smaller creatures are the first to be infected, and there's also a storyline with a medical facility that may or may not be at the genesis of this, but it's basically a straightforward horror survival, post-viral outbreak story that's just really gritty and dark and interesting. And that's got it's J.D. Arnold, the writer. He's done a book with Top Shelf before, and Tony Guaraldi Brown is the artist. And he's Tony's just really kind of naturally a fine artist, and so the artwork that he's doing on that is very inky and dark, and with a watercolor limited palette. And his renderings of the animals are just insane.
They look pretty freaking creepy.
Strong imagery successful popular book.
That's great. Well, you guys have a lot of great stuff going on. I have to say I've been impressed with a lot of the things that you've sent me, and I have to say, I mean, I really do think that you guys have the making of like a really like new great indie comic company. I hope that things are really going well. Have you had any like interest in any of these properties from like Hollywood and stuff? Because some of it just seems tailor-made.
Not yet. Like I said, the books have just come out. We've got some stuff that different things with Hollywood media opportunities, but with these books, they've just come out, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if somebody becomes interested in them. But
yeah, that is part of what Comic-Con is for. That's great. Well, I appreciate you coming on here with me on Part-Time Fanboy, and you know, thanks for, you know, doing this interview, and I'll probably run into you at Comic-Con, but you know, best of luck with the show and, you know, everything else, because I think you guys are doing some really great stuff, like I said, and I'm impressed.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and by all means, yeah, appreciate having me on, and spread the word, tell everyone, you know, if you like the books, you bet. We've got some really cool quality stuff going on, and anything goes in the Danger Zone. It's all genres. Amazing books out and more to come. And Night of the 80s Undead, the first issue just came out. Like I said, there's two more to come, so it's plenty of time to check that out and get signed up with that too.
And these will all be available at San Diego as well, correct?
Oh yeah, I was going to say, you mentioned San Diego. We're going to be there. Action Lab will have a booth in the independent publisher area, and I will have a table in the small press area. So you can find us. I think it's L16 is where I'm at, and I forget the booth number. Yeah, we'll definitely be at San Diego. We'll have all the Danger Zone books there, and we're going to have a lot of we'll have a lot of Action Lab books there as well, and a lot of exclusive limited edition books at the show, including one of the new Danger Zone upcoming titles, that's Bo Plushy Gangsta, which is I'm just going to say that, and it's another
awesome,
mind-blowingly cool book that once you see this, you will gladly hand over your money. It's an amazing book.
Oh, wow. Great. Well, I'm looking forward to checking your stuff out. You will be getting some of my money when I'm down there. And I really like your stuff. And so once again, I've been talking to Jason Martin, the creator of Night of the 80s Undead and the publisher of Action Lab Danger Zone. Well, best of luck to you at Comic-Con, Jason. And, you know, I look forward to the rest of the series.
Great. I'm glad you like it. And thanks again for having me on. And we'll see you soon, sounds like.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely. Take care.
Part-time fanboy.com.